It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech. There's not a lot of tech news, but fortunately, we've got great people joining us. Father Robert Ballesair from the Vatican City, Dwight Silverman from the Houston Chronicle, and from theregister.com, my friend Ian Thompson. We're going to talk about CES. It's coming, but what's it going to be like? The streaming wars, forget that. It was an amazing 2020 for all the streaming sites, and a farewell to Farmville. It's all coming up next on TWiT.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 804, recorded Sunday, January 3rd, 2021. The Bento Box Satellite. This Week in Tech is brought to you by the TriCaster 2 Elite by NewTek, the most complete live production system on the planet. There's a TriCaster for every production, including yours and especially ours. Go to newtek.com/TriCaster, where an interactive guide will help you decide which TriCaster is right for you. And by Mint Mobile. Switching to Mint Mobile's premium wireless service is the easiest way to save this year. Maximize your savings with plans starting at just $15 a month and get it shipped to your door for free at mintmobile.com/twit. And by ExpressVPN. Stop handing over your personal data to ISPs who mine your activity and sell off your information for 3 extra months free with a 1-year package. Go to expressvpn.com/twit. It's time for TWiT, This Week in Tech. Didn't mean to shout, sorry. Our first show of the new year. This is a show where we get together and talk about the week's tech news, of which there is virtually none. But fortunately, dear friends join the panel today, and I know that we'll all have lots to say, starting with our digital Jesuit, Father Robert Ballesair, who is back in Rome, I think.
I am. I made it back here a couple of days before the new year, and I have, I think, 3 days left in my quarantine before I can come out of my little room.
Oh, geez. So they make you stay in your room for 2 weeks or for how long?
10 days. So we do 10 Jeez. Days with a test tomorrow.
Wow.
Yeah, the third day
from
the last.
Well, it's right to be prudent, because I know the Holy Father does not like to wear a mask.
Yeah, we've been counseling
just
for the optics, you really should be wearing a mask. But the vaccines have arrived and they're starting to get the first tier. So hopefully within, I'd say, a month, the entire Vatican will be vaccinated.
At least all of those over the age of 80, which is like 99%.
Yeah, that's all of us.
Anyway, I missed you. It's great to see you again, Father Robert Ballesair. Also joining us, another old friend. This is really old friend week on TWiT, Dwight Silverman, who is the tech burger at the Houston Chronicle. Although, do you want to share your news, or should we wait for a couple of weeks and talk about it later?
No, we can talk about it now. I've been pretty open about it on social media.
That's exciting.
I have wound up after saying I was going to retire. There's a buyout at the Chronicle. And I'm very close to turning 65, and I thought, well, this is an opportunity, so I decided to take the buyout. And I was going to go off on my own. And
the last time we talked, you said you were going to do that. Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to go off and, like, do a Substack newsletter, as every other journalist in the world is doing. and I was going to do a Medium blog and, you know, kind of work the two between each other. And then I got contacted by the senior VP of content at Forbes, who asked me to join them as what amounts to an online tech columnist with a newsletter. And we're still kind of working out whether it'll be mostly newsletter or it'll be mostly stories, you know, what the mix is going to be and kind of what I'll be writing about. But I will be a staff member and a full Forbes staffer.
That's exciting.
And we'll go back to having a full-time job with a boss.
Do you get to keep the money that the Chronicle gave you?
You keep
the buyout? That's the best of all worlds possible. Yes, that's wonderful.
Yes, well, it's a good, you know, because I'm close to retirement. I am
anyway,
close to retirement.
Yeah, yeah.
And so you just sock that away, and it's, you know, it becomes a good cushion. You know, if I love Forbes, I'll be there as long as I love it.
Nice. You know, writing so, you can
and
do.
And if I decide I want to actually retire, I can do it.
Well, it's great to have you back. And then, ladies and gentlemen, he's Terry Thomas with a faux hawk, our very own Ian Thompson.
Oh, thank you so much.
Isn't that nice? Well, I had to explain it somehow. Ian Thompson, the news editor at theregister.com. Hello, Ian.
Hello there, and Happy New Year to you all.
Happy New Year. New Year to all of you. Yeah, this is it's 2021. Now, there's some question about how you should spell that. Some say 2020 W-O-N. Get it? 2021. But I prefer to think, I'm going to be thinking on the positive side. This is the year we come out of it. We're going to come back. Everything's going to come back. One thing that's not going to come back, though, CES. It's too late for CES. CES is next week, and it's all virtual, right? How many of you have, signed up for CES? Father Robert, yeah. Dwight has. Ian, are you going to CES?
Nope. No, I mean, part of the deal when I joined the Register was I didn't have to do CES anymore because it's just a heaving mess of a show. And yeah, okay, doing it virtually will cover the news announcements, don't get me wrong, but we're not going to sit through endless presentations about, this is our new Samsung TV. It's really cool. It does this and this and this. You know, it's
so just... I'm totally confused about, I mean, I guess what it really is just a placeholder for next year when they can do it in person. Is that right, Robert?
Right.
Robert? Like, I mean, you don't need to have an event if it's all streamed.
You don't, but they need to preserve the calendar. You're seeing this with a lot of the big events. They need to do something so that people get, they stay in the rhythm of the conference season. I mean, everyone knows that we have CES in January, then you have NAB somewhere in April. You got your security conferences like Black Hat and DEF CON in August. If you don't keep doing that, when you come back, you're not going to get the crowds you want.
Now, the good news is you don't have to leave your quarantine in the Vatican City, so you can watch it all. Dwight, is this a good replacement for an in-person CES, or...
I don't know if it's a replacement. It's something different. One of the only reasons I really signed up for it, I haven't been to CES in years, but one of the reasons I signed up for it is that the experience that you have when you're covering the Apple events with their virtual unveiling is so much to me, I find it more useful than going and sitting in that hall, even if I don't get the opportunity to lay hands on the devices for 30 minutes. You know, I think it's a much more, in terms of getting information, it's much more useful than having to put up with the logistics of it.
Yeah.
And so I'm curious. I'm really signing up more just out of curiosity to see what this is like. I'm looking for any Houston companies who may be present. And I'm, kind of looking for any interesting trends. And the problem is that I've only got 2 weeks left at the Chronicle, so I don't have that many columns left or things to write about. But
that's even better. But the best way to attend CES is without assignment, so you could just enjoy it. Enjoyed CES lot more when I didn't have to write about it or record anything.
Right.
Absolutely.
Right, yeah.
My favorite CESs have always been the one where I'm just wandering the hallways, because then I find something that catches my eye. That's what I'm going to cover. But I think they're doing it the wrong way, because probably the best conference replacement that I've experienced during the pandemic was DEF CON. DEF CON in August, what they did was they didn't try to push it as an educational conference. It wasn't DEF CON online. It was, we know that this is the place where many of you make your connections with other people. We're going to emphasize that. So it was all about community. I treat CES the same way. I see some of those people just at CES. If you play that up, it gives people a reason to come in. I am registered for all the CES events, but I'm probably going to attend maybe half of them, just because I have no interest in doing another Zoom call just to see more stuff.
That's, to me, it sounds like torture, that you're just, lead butt, sit in the seat and watch this presentation after presentation with buzzword after buzzword. I guess, you know, it's like just having to watch a really bad season of television or something. The other problem is, and this baffles me, for some reason, many of the keynotes are at 4:30 in the morning, California time. Like, huh?
Yeah.
You know why?
It's bizarre.
Why? For you, because of Italy. Because
like
of Italy. You love it. It's going to be great for you. So, all right.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, you're right. DEF CON did it right. The whole Discord server thing worked really, really well. But still, companies are getting it wrong. I mean, RSA announced they were going to do a physical expo and then withdrew that very, very quickly. I don't think DEF CON's going to go ahead this year either, to be honest. But, you know, we'll see how CES turns out. And from a press point of view, if they are doing online press conferences, that saves us the two-hour wait to get into a press conference only to be told at the door, we're full.
So, I mean, it makes a lot of sense for presentations. How could you duplicate the booth experience, though? Are there going to be, like, do you schedule one-on-one calls with people over Zoom? Is that how they're going to do that?
Well, Google's not even trying.
Google has not tried all year. By the way, and maybe we'll save this for later, but Google really seems to just given up on 2020. It's like, phew. And now this, what are they doing for CES?
Nothing.
Nothing.
I mean, nothing. They'll be showing a little bit, but they're not really doing that much. And look, I can understand them giving up on 2020. It's been an excrement-filled pinata of a year, and we've just had to get through it and deal with it, you know, deal with what needs to be done. But I honestly don't think conference season this year is going ahead either in its usual format, based on the very slow and odd way that vaccines are being sent out. So next year, maybe.
Maybe. Maybe. This came up on Mac Break Weekly because Apple seems to, despite the fact that they, just like Google, were affected by COVID-19, stores were closed, employees were sent home, they seem to have come out with a large number of products, very successful products, even announced an entirely new chip architecture for their Macintosh computers. It seemed like they were working this year. Google, even when they announced the Pixel 5 phone, it was such a ho-hum event. They were wearing slippers it was the strangest experience. I feel like, is it just me? Dwight, have you noticed this, that Google seems to have lost their mojo in 2020?
I think I don't think Google was ever really great at selling its devices anyway.
Yeah.
You know, their marketing has been fairly, here's a phone, you'll like it. It's kind of been at that level of intensity already. I'm not kind of surprised at what they've been doing this year.
Google I.O., they just said, never mind.
Right, right.
I mean, Microsoft had several developer events. Apple had more events than ever. Google said,
They couldn't. You know, that shows off the difference between the back-to-front and the front-to-back approach. So Apple is a back-to-front approach. They design it, and then they release it. That's always been their mojo. We know what people want. Even if they don't know what they want yet, we're going to show them.
Right.
Google is absolutely front-to-back. They want to release a little bit, see if it generates excitement, and then they build on it. Well, in something like a pandemic, the front-to-back dies because you're not getting that immediate feedback. You can't bring your equipment out in front of masses of people to say, okay, they like this, they don't like that. That's not to say it's a bad approach. It's just it's far more affected by something like a pandemic.
Yeah, except that 2020 was a boom year for technology companies, all of whom stock went through the roof. Companies like Zoom were discovered. There was opportunity in 2020. It wasn't like, oh, we could just skip this year. No big deal. There's nothing to say about it. It just baffles me.
Where did that come from? What did people buy? People were buying laptops. I mean, that was the number one seller.
Yeah. I mean, but Google Services, Google Meet could have been Zoom. I mean, there were a lot of opportunities for Google Services and things. I just don't feel like they paid that much attention.
Wait, I forget. Are we still on Duo, or have we moved on? Have they killed Duo yet?
Well, that's the other problem.
You're on Meet now, which they introduced.
This is what I mean when they're terrible at marketing.
Meet is a terrible name. Let's meet in Meet Space.
But there has been something I've really noticed this year, in that all the major companies who are dealing with online meetings dropped the ball apart from Zoom.
Right.
And even Zoom had its problems. But you'd thought Microsoft and Skype, Google and its video conferencing, FaceTime could have been expanded, all these opportunities. And it takes an outsider to come in and go, yeah, look, this is really easy. You just click on this button and click on this button.
Man.
And it's something everyone's parents can understand.
This was the year of Zoom. I mean, 2020 was. It's amazing.
Yeah.
How this company almost feels fortuitous. It didn't feel like this was a strategy that Zoom had, you know, up its sleeve. I can't wait till there's a pandemic. We're going to be ready there. It just weirdly was in the right place at the right time. And
can you think of any other company in history that has had this amount of market penetration in such a short time?
It's incredible. No.
Mm.
I don't think there's an example. I don't.
And it came with its problems because they tripped up on security originally, but then they recognized what was wrong. They hired the A team of security to basically go in there and fix it. And touch wood, it's looking pretty good at the moment.
Nobody talks about Zoom security anymore. Well, except for that one Zoom guy that they had to fire because he was working for China and shut down.
Yes.
Shut down some Zoom conferences because the government of China didn't like it. Except for that, nobody's talking about Zoom security at all. It's very strange.
And what was interesting about Zoom is that there are several other companies that have essentially the same product where you send a link, you click on it, it launches, you see multiple people, and it's just as simple. But when it happened, Zoom, maybe because of the name, was one of the was the company that was able to most take advantage.
Why
of
Why wasn't it Microsoft Teams, for instance, just as well positioned?
Because Teams is terrible.
Teams is terrible. Okay, well that's a good start.
And it's Slack. It's not Zoom.
Right.
It's a Slack clone.
Microsoft's trying to make Teams be the Zoom for 2021. There's no question. All right. So back to CES. Are we excited about LG demoing a bendable OLED gaming monitor? You press a button, it's curved. You press another button, it's flat. Are we excited about that?
No.
I've got to say, I'm really, really skeptical about any kind of flexible screen at the moment after the complete nightmares we've had over the last 18 months. They're bending it slightly rather than trying to fold it over. But, you know... It seems to be like a problem looking for a solution. You know, it just... a solution looking for a problem. It's just... It doesn't add that much.
Are we excited about the see-through TV?
Because wasn't that when I'm at watching the last, TV, what yes? I want to do is to see something else. Yeah, that's my thing. Yeah.
It's a strange product. I don't know what the market is. We will see, as we saw in person, but this is the problem. Here's a really good example of why... a virtual conference makes no sense. There will be micro LED TVs all over the place, but you'll be looking at them on Zoom. So who cares?
Mm.
Right? That was the one thing I was impressed with this year or last year in CES. Some beautiful TVs. Samsung's selling its first micro LED this year. A giant, 180 inches for $159,000.
I mean, I'm sorry. I like TV as much as the next person, but for goodness sake.
Well, see, you'd like it more because if you see Ted Lasso on a 150-inch screen, then you're like there. You're right immersed in the...
I do want the emergence of affordable large OLED screens. That I actually am interested in.
The LG rollable that we've seen for the last 4 years in a row is finally coming out. Only 100,000. Is that in your budget? No.
Oh, yeah. Me too.
LG's transparent OLED. You're right. I think OLED, the real question, though, is will OLED be supplanted? So we're going to see a lot of new LCD technologies like mini LED, which are just better backlights. And those will be less expensive than OLED. And then we're going to see micro LED is still too expensive, but it's maybe 2 or 3 years before the prices start to drop. I wonder if OLED may be the plasma of 2021. You know, this might be the last gasp.
Wow.
What do you think?
That's bold.
I love OLED.
Well, although it's still in your phones, you know, the OLED is kind of the standard in your phone right now.
Yeah.
But even then, there's talk of Apple and Samsung moving to newer technologies in those screens.
So yeah, they're going to use the mini LED in their screens, Apple is apparently.
I think companies like Samsung, who also have a retail presence, you know, they have their own stores in a lot of big markets. I think they stand to benefit from CES because if they can get those products into the stores, even just for demo purposes, people who hear about them via CES can go out and see them immediately. And I think that that's, you know, those companies like that will have some benefit.
LG, of course, in years past has had that giant video wall of OLEDs when you first enter the central hall. And that's a great thing. I don't know. It's not going to really be quite as good on a Zoom call, but are they using Zoom, by the way? What are they going to use for CES? Have they said what their technology will be?
I'm still waiting for the links. So it depends.
Probably
it's not just CES. There's a couple of events that are happening the same week. And actually, there's a couple of events happening this coming week. But I won't know until I actually get the link to see the interface.
LG will be showing, get ready for it, QNED TVs. QNED. These are mini LED TVs. So to be clear, LED TVs are actually LCDs with LED backlights. And the mini LED, they're so small you can have lots of them, which gives you a better local dimming, better dynamic range, and not a better name.
It's QNED.
QNED.
Wonder who came up with this. You know, I mean, is it a marketing department? Is it a technology department saying, no, we must have, you know, a stupid acronym?
It stands for something, I'm sure. The Q is quantum dot. Oh, the N is nanocell.
Yeah. Quantum and nano in the same name.
It's got to be good.
It's got to be great.
How about 8K?
It's like a Rick and Morty episode.
This is always, traditionally, CES has always been a generation ahead in the TVs they show. 8K, we saw last year, right? There will be a lot of 8K TVs. Again, I don't know what it means to have an 8K TV at a virtual conference. We're streaming 1080p of this 8K TV. Does not...
If you're lucky, yeah.
Anything else? What else? I mean, we always enjoy going to the basement in the North Hall basement and places like that, the Sands Expo Center, where you get the weird off-brand stuff. I don't know how you do that in a virtual conference. Do you have a little? Do you have a little tinies?
And the strange thing is, it's that gear, it's that equipment that I think would be best for a virtual attended conference, because you're right, the screens, they mean nothing. You can show me the largest resolution screen you have, and I can't tell. Show me something that's just been invented by a guy in a basement. I'm very interested in that.
Yeah. Some conferences, and I don't know what CES is going to do, have a virtual lobby or a virtual show floor, and then you can browse it and then click a link and be in a booth. I don't know what that's going to be like, though.
There was a virtual showroom like that for the rollout of the most, I believe it was the Note 10. No, it was the Fold, the Galaxy Fold 2. And it reminded me of using one of those interactive CD-ROMs back in the day where, you know, it was like being in Myst. You know, you walk in, you click on something, it tells you the specs. You walk to another area, you get a demo, you get somebody talking about it. It was kind of cool, but it did really seem like a CD-ROM experience, but it gave you more context, more of kind of a showroom and a show floor context than I've seen in other places.
I like that. CES, the CD-ROM experience.
I've been to some virtual events and immediately started flashing back to Second Life. And it was just like, wow,
this is like Second Life
with a tiny tweak. You know, it's like, have we not got better than this?
I've had a couple of pitches for virtual conferences using Oculus and VR headsets. Yeah. No.
Apparently they're using Teams. Thank you, chat room. CES to be powered by Microsoft Cloud, Teams, Azure, and more. Congratulations.
So, in other words, the first 3 days of CES will be spent taking care of all the permissions that are not set properly?
Oh, jeez.
Exactly. I mean, I'm sorry. I've yet to meet a single person who likes using Teams. You know, it's like people are raving about Zoom. They're not that peeved off with Google, but it's just when Teams comes around, everyone's just like, well, can I do this? Can I not do that? Is it watching me now? Is it not watching me now? And it's a very strange setup. I don't understand how Microsoft has dropped the ball quite so badly on this one.
Showstoppers and PepCom, those are those little events before. They're going to do events. They're going to have a virtual PepCom LobbyCon kind of thing. In fact, I think somebody on our team went to the most recent PepCom event as a kind of warm-up.
Probably Ant.
Yeah, I don't know. It'll be interesting. It's just a weird year all around. Anything you've seen, any of you that you're looking forward to finding out more about at CES this year?
Honestly, I'd like to hear more about the autonomous cars because that's been a big feature for the last couple of years.
Right.
And I don't see how that's quite going to work virtually unless they can give, you know, do a proper Q&A. But the car thing's really coming on fast, and CES has traditionally been strong on it. So I'll be keeping an eye on that one.
Yeah. There's some things they could do with self-driving cars that would be kind of interesting. They could put you in the back seat, and you could go for a ride around Vegas, which would be kind of cool, kind of fun.
It's like, I don't know, has anyone been to Vegas in the last 6 months? It must be like a ghost town, you know.
I mean, I have, just because that's where my parents were. So
did you go
I
downtown? Did you go to the Strip? Did you see anything?
I took them out of the house in the car. We never got out. We never rolled down the windows just because I wanted to get them out. It was packed.
Yeah, I feel like there's crazy people there.
Yeah.
Nobody was wearing a mask. Yeah. Nobody was social distancing. It was absolutely packed.
I suppose it makes sense. I suppose it makes sense on one level because Vegas has traditionally made its money from people who are really lousy at working out odds. But to actually see it in there is just bizarre.
So, is there anything CES related going on in Las Vegas? Are they doing anything ancillary on a small scale, like maybe demos of self-driving cars? At all, or is there going to be no physical presence there? Zero, nothing.
My understanding is there's no physical presence because it's too expensive to try to set something up and then find out maybe on the last day that there's been another lockdown and it's all off. Mm-hmm. No one wants to risk it.
There will be iHeartMedia, disclaimer, my employer on the radio show is going to have a music and immersive interactive experience. I don't know where it'll be. I mean, you'll attend it virtually. Ryan Seacrest will host it. A fireside chat with singer-songwriter Dua Lipa. Is that how you say it? Dua Lipa? Dua Lipa? And a special performance, I don't know, by Billie Eilish, 7 p.m. So there'll be a concert. That's always one of the fun things about CES used to be. I think it got less interesting as time went by, but would be the after hours events, the parties, the concerts. There were some pretty cool stuff in years gone by.
Well, I think maybe Dwight and also Padre might remember this, but do you remember when CES about 10 years ago was all about 3D TV?
And they had
that Taylor Swift, the Sony had the Taylor Swift conference, which ended up with the CEO of Sony visibly creeping out Taylor Swift.
That's great.
I must take, nothing I must like take it. You shopping, my dear. It's just like, it's
always a
man,
good look.
Creepy old man.
Oh, my God. I wonder how they're going to do that, if they're going to try to do a live event, which they'll stream, or if they'll just have everybody in their living room. Our standards have really changed for what we consider entertainment during all of this. It's like, I'll just watch somebody in his living room. I'm in my living room. You're in your living room.
Although I got to say, some of the best music has come out during the pandemic of people just recording in their homes, covering a song, and then releasing the video, just them playing it on the internet. There's a bunch of really excellent music out there as a result of this. And you got to wonder how that's going to change the music business, once we get to come out of this.
It's one of my favorite topics is what's going to persist and what's not going to persist. For instance, weirdly, last year, hardcover book sales were up 18%. So I don't think that's going to continue. I think that's like a that's because of the pandemic. That's a blip. Audiobooks also up, I think, 16%. And ebooks, which have been dying, they've been down every year for the last few years, were up as well in the double-digit percentage. But none of those trends, I think, will continue. On the other hand, streaming services gained about 50% overall in customers. And that, I think, is going to hasten the end of cable television and it's going to really move us to the over-the-top world that we've been slowly moving to. It's going to hasten it. So it's interesting. In some cases, the pandemic makes changes that won't last. But I think things like Zoom will continue for a long time. I think Disney Plus had a huge year because of it.
Well, I got to say, usually on New Year's Eve, my wife and I will go out clubbing or raving, as I believe it's known in the year. And so 3 years ago, for example, we were watching one of our favorite bands in Glasgow. And yeah, it was a great night out. And this year they did a paid stream. We listened to it at home. I didn't have anyone lecturing on the wife. I could have a cup of tea when I wanted to. It was actually a pretty good night. You miss the energy of a club, but I think those kind of streaming services are really going to take off.
Well, that's what I wonder. I mean, there are certain in-person things we do, like conferences and concerts. I have to imagine that live performers are suffering mightily because of this. And will they come back? They say that the 1920s, the Roaring Twenties, was part of the reason it was the Roaring Twenties is because people were so burned out from the pandemic of 1918 and being quarantined and masked for so long that when they finally came out, it was the Roaring Twenties. Do you think we'll have our own Roaring Twenties? You think so, Dwayne?
Yes, 100%. Yes, without a doubt. There's a book I've been recommending, Pale Rider, which is about the Spanish flu pandemic. And in it, they talk about kind of the changes in society as a result of that. And yeah, I think we're just going to have an explosion of people traveling, going to parties, concerts. I think every band in the world that's a name will get out and tour. I mean, I think it's going to be almost like a frantic golden age when this is all done.
Oh, I hope you're right. Because
if you look on social media, like all of my friends on Facebook and Instagram, all they talk about is when this is over, here's where I'm going. You know, and they post pictures of countries they've been to that they love.
It's what we wife and I fantasize about practically every night is where do you want to go first? What do you want to do first? Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And remember, the Roaring Twenties wasn't just about people going out and partying. It was people changing what they've come to expect from society. You know, after such a prolonged time of not being able to do what you want to do, suddenly you're changing how you consume. You're changing what you consider to be success. You're changing what you consider to be stable employment or stable housing. We could do the same thing. And if you do that, the companies that latch onto that and start feeding that appetite, they're going to make a mint. It's going to be a free for all once the dam breaks.
And that's mostly analog, you think? Analog companies.
Yeah, experiences.
Yeah. Physical experience. I mean, the one comment I'm getting again and again on social media is when this is over, so many people are going to get hugs because you know no one has been able to hug everyone else. No one's been able to go visit anyone else.
Why stop at hugging? Let's just all rip off our clothes. You know there's going to be a massive baby boom.
Yes.
9 months after this ends.
Yeah.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Lots of French kissing.
Yeah. I think if we really want the roaring 2020s to duplicate the 1920s, we should ban alcohol as well. Let's just do that, too.
Let's just repeat it.
Let's just repeat the whole thing. Now, we remember how it ended with the Great Depression, so maybe we could skip that part. But,
But I mean, the prohibition of alcohol did have a huge social influence on the United States, because men and women started drinking together for the first time, for example.
Right.
Different races started mixing together.
Oh, that's a good point.
So, I mean, it was an enormous social driver, albeit an incredibly stupid policy. But, you know, I mean, it was an enormous driver for social change. And you saw women's headlines going up and they started smoking. And, okay, so it wasn't all good. But, I mean, you know, men and women mixed a lot.
I might start smoking. I might next year. If I survive.
It took me years to give it up. I'm never taking this.
This week in smoking.
No, I promise. I am not going to start smoking.
You say that. I applied for a job in a magazine in the 1990s, and they had a cigar reviewer, and that was his job.
What a great job.
He reviewed cigars.
Oh, what a great job.
There's still the magazine Cigar Aficionado is still out there.
Sure.
Really?
Oh, yeah. So Dr. Mom is saying there already is a baby boom. But I think there'll be a double boom. It'll be like a sonic boom times two.
I think there'll be a divorce boom as well, to be honest.
Yeah.
I don't wish to sound cynical about this.
No, I think you're right.
This has already happened to a couple of friends of mine. And when people are released from their houses and being in the same close confines with their partners, and maybe having decided over the last year that, yeah, this is maybe too much of a good thing, I think we're going to see a big divorce and a big baby boom.
Yeah. Well, think of all the single people. Who have been alone for the last 9 months. Just think about those people. They may be anxious to pick up on some of those divorcees. Who knows, you know? Might be a good thing all around. I don't know. I've always find this fascinating. I think that's interesting that's what happened in the 1920s. So I hope so. I hope so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Let's take a little break. We have a very nice panel, which is good because we have very little news. Ian Thompson is here from theregister.com. What do you do at theregister.com over the last few weeks of the year? There's nothing to talk about.
Well, because we're a British-owned company, we had a British Christmas, which was we stopped on Christmas Eve, and we started we'll start again on January the 4th, because a good long Christmas is a British tradition, and we think people should have it. That said, we did have a couple of news pieces, one of which we may be discussing later, where journos voluntarily came out of the Christmas period and wrote stuff up simply because it was really important news.
Like solar winds, of course.
Yeah. Well, there was that we got rid of fairly early, but it was the British government's really
Brexit?
Bizarre Brexit advice, which I feel we may be coming to. But as it turns out, one of our guys did some digging. And there was a really good reason for doing what they did. But more on that later.
Oh, I can't wait. I actually wanted to ask you about Brexit. You're our token Brit, so. and our token priest is also
bloody here. Bloody rebellious colonial.
The digital Jesuit himself, Father Robert Balasair, who's back eating soggy pasta in Vatican City. I'm sorry about that. Did you at least eat well when you were with your family?
Oh, my gosh. I had all the food. You can probably tell. I mean, when I got home, it was a feast every single day.
Oh, what fun.
Not necessarily because it was great food, but because it was different food. I was yearning for anything that wasn't pasta.
Yeah. Great. Good to have you. And Dwight Silverman, who lives on Tech Burgers. That's his newsletter, HoustonChronicle.com/TechBurger. He's taking his act on the road. He'll be joining Forbes in about a month. That's very exciting. When you come back, we'll talk about but that's good to have you, Dwight.
Good to be here. I'm your token Texan.
Our token Texan. That's true. I want to say you may have noticed there's a slight difference in the video feed you're watching today because we decided to take this opportunity to upgrade what has been the backbone of Twit and all of our video production since the very beginning, our new tech TriCaster. And John has been so excited. For John, the end of the pandemic happened and we got the new TriCaster 2 Elite, which is the new top-of-the-line TriCaster. Do you have some things stored up you can show us with the TriCaster? He's still learning it. We got all sorts of new stuff. It's the most complete live production system on the planet. In fact, NewTek has updated its entire line of TriCasters. No matter which you select, you get... It's the most amazing suite of media production capabilities at your fingertips. This is something I'm going to miss at CES this year, is Kiki Stockhammer demonstrating what you can do with a TriCaster. I just would stand in awe and watched as she pushed the T-bar and pushed the buttons, and all sorts of amazing things happened. It's more than a live video production. The TriCaster 2 Elite we use here at TWiT is an all-encompassing digital media solution. If you create content for the internet, for mobile, for television, for your church, for your synagogue, for anything that you're making TV productions, you need a TriCaster. The TriCaster 2 Elite is software-driven, IP-native technology. That's one of the things we're most excited about. It provides the capability, connectivity, and control you need to take on any sort of digital media production. And when you think about the variety of features, I'm actually really impressed because our team, they just dig into this. They go, oh, what else can I do? There is no other live production solution that can enable the digital media workflows like the TriCaster 2 Elite. Things like Live Call Connect, which is built in now. It's this NewTek's latest innovation. It enhances your production by letting you connect to anyone, anywhere, on any device with high-quality video and audio, regardless of the caller's device. So that means you can use Skype, you can use Teams, you can use Zoom meetings, you can use Slack, you can use anything. The most popular video conferencing applications are all there. There's the integrated live set technology, which we don't use, but it's amazing. You've seen it. Well, the problem is you probably have seen it, but don't know, because it lets you transform any location into the most elaborate virtual environment. And with the NewTek TriCaster 2 Elite, you get access to a premium library of NewTek live set virtual sets. So you can have it be any way you want. Choose from an extended variety of simulated environments, whatever you need to fit your brand, your style, or just get wacky and have some fun with it. And then there's the Live Graphics Creator plugin. We've just started to dip our toe into this. You can design animated titles, motion graphics, looping effects, and you could do it with the Creative Cloud tools that you already know and love. Then import them directly into your TriCaster live production system. We were able, all the lower thirds on our you see now in our production are just basically Photoshop files. It made it so much easier to do what we're doing. Maybe you noticed how nice and clean our graphics look now. Live Graphics Creator lets you produce and present spectacular live graphics faster and easier than ever before. When you're ready to take your production live, there are presets built in for Facebook Live, Microsoft Azure, Twitch, YouTube Live, and more. With a flexible implementation, a more complete set of capabilities, and a unique capacity for distributed production, TriCaster 2 Elite frees you from the traditional boundaries of live video production. The TriCaster 2 Elite, we are so proud, so happy to be a TriCaster house and to be able to use our new TriCaster. It's transformative. It's setting new standards. It's better than broadcast. Go to newtek.com/TriCaster. You'll find an easy-to-use interactive guide that kind of lets you walk through the features and choose which TriCaster is right for you. NewTek is NEWTEK, newtek.com/TriCaster. We've been working with the NewTek team now for how long is it, John? It's probably 15 years. And it's been really fun to watch the TriCaster just get better and better and better and more professional. I don't think TWiT would exist without the NewTek TriCaster, and we're so excited to get the new TriCaster 2 Elite. John's just hopping up and down, up and down. We've had trainings. We've been having so much fun playing with it. We got a new control surface that's just sweet. It's cool. Thank you, NewTek. Appreciate it. Really do. You guys rock. Rock. Somebody wants to know, the chat room saying, what happened to the old... Oh, my God. Another display of overcooked eggs from Father Robert Ballester. What are those in soggy? It looks like they're soggy bell peppers there.
So take some bell peppers and leave them out for a while and then drop an egg into it and overcook it. It's good stuff. Oh. It's, you know, I
you're
think it's a traditional
Italy,
Roman dish.
Sake.
I know. That's what's
you're,
frustrating.
You're in Italy, the home of good food. How have the cooks not been whipped naked through the streets? To
They're priests. Actually, that's a question. Do priests cook, or do you have a staff of cooks, right?
We're not allowed to cook. So if you have more than a certain number of people in a house, it's considered an institution, and we're not even allowed into our own kitchen.
Oh, my gosh. Is that a union rule, a government rule?
It's a government rule.
Oh, interesting. So even though the Vatican is its own country, you're still governed by Italian regulations.
It depends. So if I'm in the office says actually in Vatican City. The house where I live, it's got two addresses, one in Vatican City and one in Rome.
Oh, that's so weird.
Yeah.
Is there like a line in the floor that you walk step over? I'm in Italy. I'm in the Vatican. I'm in Italy.
There actually is. So if you see the plaques, there are plaques that say Zona Extraterritoriale.
Oh,
when you see that, that means you've crossed into the Vatican.
Oh, that's very interesting. So one of the places on Lisa and my list when we can travel again is to come visit you. So don't stay there for a little while longer. Okay.
I don't think I have a choice. I've asked.
You serve at a higher authority. There's not much you can do about that. Let's see. By the way, that book that you were recommending, I just wanted to pass it along because I know people will ask. It's called Pale Rider, The Spanish Flu of 1918 and How It Changed the World by Laura Spinney.
Yes, great book.
S-P-I-N-N-E-Y. I actually read another book. I think it was Gina Colada's book about the Spanish flu some time ago. And it is really a fascinating story. And I don't think people talk, like, I don't remember my grandparents talking about it at all. And I suspect that my kids probably won't tell their grandkids about this year either. It's like
they don't remember it. They don't want to think about it.
They don't want to know.
It's terrible. And although one of the most interesting things in that book, and I did an interview with the author for a story I did, strangely enough, at the very start of the lockdown, about what will stick. It was kind of, the thing you're interested in, Leo.
Yeah.
And we talked, and as part of that story, I interviewed the author, and one of the things she pointed out is that one of the reasons we have the health insurance system that we do now in the United States was because it came out of the Spanish flu.
Oh, interesting.
And that pandemic.
Oh, interesting.
Which there was not a health insurance business then, and it came out of that.
Oh, that's very interesting. Yeah. Well, I wouldn't be surprised if healthcare in the United States changes after this.
It can't get worse. So, it's just I think a lot of Americans are now realizing that, universal healthcare does kind of make sense. Other countries seem to be coming out of this a lot better than America is, and there's a reason for that.
Yeah.
And it's not just pig-headed politicians. It's the fact that if you don't have a job, you don't have healthcare. Other than the emergency room, and that doesn't work out very well. So
it's
even
more than
see some changes.
One of the biggest reasons why people say they're not for universal healthcare is they said, well, it's the cost. I don't want to pay for other people's healthcare. I think what the pandemic has shown is, well, if you run that model and you have a pandemic, it destroys any cost saving you could have ever imagined.
It costs you one way or the other is the point.
Right.
Precisely.
Right. Yeah.
We've basically lost what we've lost from GDP. We've essentially lost the equivalent of universal health care in the United States for 30 years.
Yeah.
So do you really want to take that risk?
Yeah. Meanwhile, across the pond, Brexit happened. Who would have thunk it? Congratulations. Congratulations.
Yeah, okay. Look, I've been getting a lot of... This was the one advantage of Trump getting elected, or the first tangible advantage.
People stopped talking about Boris.
Yeah, I mean, after 3 months of people going, you see, you make stupid decisions too. And America said, hold my beer and watch this.
What is it about strange orange hair that attracts these guys? I don't understand.
The problem is Boris is a sex symbol to some people. I mean, I've got people who were good friends, still are good friends, who are just like, yeah, I'd do him. And you're like, really? He looks like a Labrador.
Wow. I'm not saying I'd do him. But I have to say, if they weren't world leaders, they're both kind of charismatic, funny people that you would kind of like. They're like Benny Hill. They're like somebody. They're amusing. The problem
the problem is that as the pandemic has shown, having an amusing leader
not
is
a good thing.
Subtle use
not
if
a
you've got
thing.
A global crisis going on.
So the Brexit trade deal, which was 921 pages, included a section on encryption technology, saying you should use modern email packages, including Outlook, Mozilla Mail, and Netscape Communicator 4.x. The last, yeah. I should point out, major release of Netscape Communicator was 1997. I'm thinking this maybe was cut and pasted from somewhere.
Well, yeah, one of our guys actually tracked it down, and it was cut and paste from a 2008 treaty on the EU genetic database.
But even that's out of date. In 2008, Netscape Communicator was out of date by 11 years, hadn't been developed in 11 years or something, 9 years. What's going on?
Oh, come on. It's only relatively recently that if you logged into some government, U.S. government websites, you had to use Internet Explorer.
Oh, that's true.
You know, I mean, it cuts both ways. There's an awful lot of dead tech out there.
It recommended 1024-bit RSA encryption and the SHA-1 SHA-1 hashing algorithm.
Even Microsoft's given up on SHA-1 now. I mean, you can crack it for less than 50 grand in cloud computer
resources. Oh, it's nothing. Yeah, yeah.
It's painful, but the whole Brexit thing has just been a complete nightmare from start to finish. So we're out. That's it. You know, I'll make this prediction now. In 10 years, we'll be back cap in hand, begging them to take us back. But yeah, we shall
There's
see.
There's some oddball side effects, too. For instance, for years, my father rode a beautiful British Raleigh bicycle with a lovely Brooks handmade leather saddle. These are made in England and then shipped to the owner of the company, which is an Italian company, and they can't be shipped back to England. If you're in England, you can no longer buy these English-made beautiful bicycle seats. And I imagine that's just one of a million little weird side effects.
It's ridiculous. It's like, The UK government is proclaiming, well, we've got a good deal and you can still trade with Europe. Yeah, if you're willing to spend, you know, a couple of hours doing the paperwork. And if you're buying from a European supplier, who are you going to buy for? A British one or a French one or a German one? You know, if you can get seamless transit between France and Germany and yourself, why on earth would you go to Britain in the first place? And this is going to hit our tech industry. I mean, it's already hitting the software jobs market, because I've now got five friends in the UK who have moved to Europe the minute the Brexit vote came in and are now applying and getting citizenship. So there is a massive brain drain going on in the United Kingdom
good.
At the moment.
Yeah.
Well, no, I mean, the only people who are going to be staying are people who are either retired, too dumb to move, don't have skills which could translate overseas, or who are just so caught up on the Little Englander thing. And it's just, when you turn your back on the largest trading bloc in the world, who just happens to be 20 miles across the English Channel from you, it's not going to end well. It really isn't.
There, I read a good piece. I can't remember if it was in the Independent or the Guardian, that said a lot of it's just a nostalgia for an England that never really existed. The plucky island that fought off the Nazis in World War II. And of course, anybody who's read any history knows that Churchill was completely new. This is over unless we can get the United States to get involved. We are toast. And the fear of, Hitler invading was, you know, completely terrifying to everybody. But for some reason, there's this kind of nostalgia that, this Emerald Isle, this Britain, we fought them off in 1940 and we don't need Europe at all.
Well, there's the apocryphal tale that when Churchill gave his great speech, you know, in Parliament, we shall fight them on the beaches, we shall fight them on the landing grounds, we shall fight them in the hedgerows, he sat down afterwards and then said to his partner, and then we'll fight them with broken bottles because we've got nothing else to do it with.
Oh, gosh.
Well, I mean, you've got people like Dyson, who was one of the biggest backers of Brexit, and he's moved his billion-dollar empire to Singapore.
That's just nuts.
Just look at the people who are pushing for this, saying, oh, I'm patriotic. Yes, I am with London. I am with England. I am a citizen of the UK. And then they moved out. That should be a pretty good indicator of how this is going to go.
Yeah.
Boris Johnson's father announced a couple of days ago he's applying for French citizenship.
Awesome.
You know, one of the richest men in Britain who supported the Brexit campaign has already moved to Monaco. But for the people that are backing it, this was about tax laws and getting there, you know, making sure they got theirs. So I think an awful lot of people have been misled on that one, and it's going to turn around and bite us on the bum for quite some time.
It's difficult when you're a small island nation not to be a to be a partner in these trade negotiations with a larger bloc. We'll see. We always have had a special relationship with the UK, and I think Americans love the UK. So,
well, I think they love it in that it's quaint, but I've yet to hear a politician on this side of the salty puddle. I mean, when they go to England, then it's, yes, we have a great special relationship and the rest of it. But over here, I've never heard it called special relationship. And also, let's consider the word relationship. That's what you call someone you're shagging that you don't want to acknowledge as a partner. So it's just kind of like...
Oh, Lord. Oh,
I have heard that. I've heard that line, special relationship, for a long, long time.
Oh, yeah,
so,
as have I. Yeah,
yes, that's a very common thing.
It may be
easier
to
right.
say than to do.
Yes. We've updated it for the modern age. We now call it, I think it's a booty call. Yeah, booty call.
It's special.
Interesting that you know about that, Father. But
I have to say, he knows more than I do about these things. It must be an occupational hazard.
Research. I've got the internet.
Yeah, people come to you and confess all sorts of things.
Yes, I can say that there have been a couple of times where I've had to be very polite and I've had to be very official. And afterwards, I'd have to look something up and go, what the heck was that?
What was he saying? That's when the Urban Dictionary is so very, very handy, I must say. Let's see. Let me get back on tech here. Let's quickly, before too long. Hey, here's a story that made me so very happy. You know Wondery, which is a podcast network founded about 5 years ago. They have shows like Dirty John, Dr. Death, The Shrink Next Door. Amazon just bought them for $300 million.
Wow.
I've heard people say, and it's going to be part of Amazon Music. I've heard people say, oh, yeah, this is Amazon trying to build a podcast business to compete with Spotify, and maybe perhaps Apple will get into this and others. But honestly, Wondery is not going to give you a podcast business. I'm not sure exactly what it gives you. Please explain to me, what's the land boom in podcasting? What's that all
well,
about?
Well, in this particular case with Wondery, it gives them intellectual property for Amazon that Amazon Studios could use in a variety of ways. So, you know, Dirty John has already been turned into a miniseries.
Dr. Death's going to be a television
right, series. Right. And so what Wondery specializes in is it's more almost more like old style radio theater.
Right.
Their podcasts
right.
are, you know, true crime, and they right. tell stories. And this is something that's just gold for Amazon Studios.
Hernan Lopez, who founded it, is a former Fox executive. In a way, this was Quibi done right. This was because he founded it in 2016. This was Hollywood saying, you know, we should get, you know, this digital transformation is happening. How do we get involved? And instead of making sideways video of 7 minutes that you could put on a phone but not on your TV, he came up with this, which was, I think, probably a better move. And unlike Quibi, Wondery is still in business. So, good news. Amazon has not said when the Wondery deal was expected to close. It has to, you know, it's one of those deals that has to be.
I mean, at this point, $300 million is a rounding error for Amazon, and they know that they can make money off of content.
Yeah.
And they also know that right now, I'm not disparaging the catalog that Amazon has. They have some great shows. They've got things like The Expanse, some of their independents. But Netflix is kind of kicking their butt on the content side. And rather than trying to match them beat for beat, this could be a smart play. They're going off into a territory that's not really taken up by any of the big players, and Wondery gives them access.
Actually, you know, Amazon in 2020 was this number two, Amazon Prime, the number two network in terms of growth, did very well in 2020. So it is, you're right, Netflix is number one, then it's Amazon. I had a list. Let's see if I can find that.
I mean, they've had some good shows. Sorry, after you, please, Dwight.
Okay, so one of the things that's interesting about this to me is you've got Spotify buying up, essentially podcasting studios. Amazon has made its move, and Apple, which, you know, for years was kind of the place you went to get podcasts, has kind of fallen out of that running. And, you know, if you have an iPhone or a Mac, you know, yeah, you use it to, it's the easiest way to get podcasts, but they don't have any exclusive content. They don't, they're not kind of marketing anything as this is an Apple podcast. And I wonder if that's, if they're just watching this and thinking it's not worth their time, or, you know, why they haven't made that move themselves.
Yeah. Interesting question. They are apparently hiring people and creating content, but they, as you said, Father Robert, they do it behind the scenes. And I wonder if it might be that in 6 months, maybe at the WWDC or at an Apple event, they'll announce, oh, and here's our whole, you know, new lineup.
Podcast plus.
Podcasts. Yeah, exactly. Mm. Yeah.
I mean, Apple doesn't seem to be having a great deal of success in the
content.
The content side of things.
Yeah.
And I mean, HBO is doing fairly well. Amazon's not doing, I mean, The Boys seems to go be going down fairly well on Amazon, and they've still got the Grand Tour and the rest of it, or did have. But yeah, Netflix is still eating everyone's lunch at the moment.
Yeah. It's interesting.
And rightfully so. They've put some really good shows onto streaming and created some really good shows for streaming.
Well, and again, this is such an unusual year because people are watching so much more. That actually, I think one of the reasons Amazon Prime, for instance, has done well is people finished Netflix. And so they needed something. You know, people are subscribing to more services than ever before. Wall Street Journal said that they had a Harris poll that said Americans on average say they're willing to subscribe to 3.6 different streaming services.
Do you remember when we thought cord cutting was going to save money?
Oh, not even close. Not even close.
Yeah. Although, actually, Father, as I would say, if you haven't seen it, Derry Girls on Netflix, well worth a watch.
You keep plugging that every time you're here.
I'm sorry. I love it so much.
He loves Derry Girls. Yes, he does.
I only do Netflix 1 month a year. I binge everything and then unsubscribe. No, it's just I don't need it. I finished Netflix in a month. Oh, and by the way, Amazon Prime in Italy, it's ridiculously cheap. I pay €29 for the year.
Oh, wow.
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 So this is the graph I was looking for from the Wall Street Journal. Cumulative number of U.S. streaming subscribers. The red is Netflix, 66 million. But Prime Video, probably because you get it with Amazon Prime, right? 47.9 million in the Q4 2020. Hulu's number three with, 34 million, 35
makes
million.
Sense.
Then CBS All Access with 10 million. That's got to be Star Trek, right? I mean, I'm surprised to see that in the list. Showtime. Disney Plus coming on strong.
Disney's going to move up. I see Disney hitting three or four, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Disney's now at 37 million, so.
Yeah, Disney's got the content. And they are very, very good at marketing. Yeah. So,
yeah.
HBO
also has thrown Disney has thrown all of its eggs in that basket, and they will make sure that it happens for them. That's the future of their entertainment business.
We talked about it when it happened a couple of weeks ago. You know, Warner is putting all its movies on HBO Max,
right?
And all for 2021, all the first run movies will stream live for free on HBO Max, day and date with the release in the theaters.
Indeed,
I mean,
many
Disney,
people.
It's not just the movies. Like, Mandalorian has redeemed the Star Wars universe for a lot of fans who were so jaded with the new trilogy.
Interesting.
They've realized they can actually do better storytelling in this episodic format.
Hmm. Here's maybe another telling graph from the Wall Street Journal: original episodes released per quarter. At that big red line at the top, that's Netflix. That's Netflix. They're cranking the content out. Amazon Prime is a distant second. HBO Max is coming on strong, though. That's the red line that just started in a couple of months ago. Hulu and Disney Plus also creating new content.
Originally, HBO stuck their content on Netflix, as I understand it, and then, you know, it's that they've just decided, hell with it. Why? Let's cut out the middleman and do this ourselves. And I agree with the father on Mandalorian. Although I think Rogue One went an awful long way along that way as well. Still the best Star Wars film after Empire.
So almost all the top 10 shows dominated by Netflix in Nielsen's weekly top 10 streaming list. But The Queen's Gambit was, I think, its biggest hit. But The Crown is probably also in there. Disney Plus is The Mandalorian and Amazon's The Boys, both of which you guys mentioned among the other shows from other networks to break into the top 10.
I can't believe The Expanse isn't up there. People need to watch The Expanse. That is
The Expanse is incredible. It's an incredible show, and the new season is out, and I was so mad they didn't drop all of the episodes at once, because now I got a week to see each new one.
I'm not going to watch it. I'm going to wait until the end, because I need to binge the whole thing. I just love that story. I love what they've done with the universe building.
Are some shows better binged and others better watched weekly? Or is everything better binged?
I don't know. I mean, I think, honestly, on one level, I kind of miss the old days where you had to wait a week to... And I've been doing this with Bake Off, for example. You know, it's frustrating that you can't binge that straight off. But there is a certain kind of frisson in waiting a bit and actually, you know, waiting until it comes out. The only downside, of course, is the internet. So you've got to stay off certain forums and the rest of it for 2 or 3 days because Britain before the US. And I don't want my British mates telling me who's won. But there is a certain old-fashioned style. But honestly, I think for anyone who didn't grow up with VCRs, they're just going to want to binge everything.
Well, the other problem with the internet is when Wonder Woman 84 came out that day, Christmas night, there were a lot of server errors and issues because everybody watched it all at the same. The minute it came out, everybody tried to watch it.
And then they trashed it, and that kept people... You know, I decided I wasn't going to watch it because of all the bad buzz about it. And they probably lost me as a viewer. One of the interesting things about binging versus watching episodically is that I think, particularly with Netflix, the show creators, when they know it's going to be all dumped at once, change the structure of the shows so that you don't have necessarily a big cliffhanger at the end of the show. Right. It just ends, and then there's credits for the new episode, and then it just picks up in the same scene sometimes. The whole structure and the way they film it and then edit it changes when it's designed to be binged.
I've got an example for that. I love two shows, Star Trek The Next Generation and The Expanse. Right now, those are probably my top two. I just did a rewatch of the entire Next Generation when I was back in the States. Because it's on Amazon Prime, and I realized I missed like a dozen episodes, and I had not realized that I'd missed that because back when they were first on TV, I had skipped a week or two, and it didn't affect the story. If I skipped an episode of The Expanse, there would be a huge plot hole.
Right.
So that's the difference between episodic and binge-worthy shows.
Well, also, I have a short-term memory problem, and so if I don't watch a show one night after the other, I end up going, who's that? What happened? Why is he there? What? Wait a minute. I thought he was dead. So that's another problem. I wonder if bad movies do better in a streaming environment or worse. Wonder Woman came out of the gate doing very well, but in the second weekend, the box office went down 67%, and I have to think that it's a lot of people like you, Dwight, who saw the reviews and said, well, I guess I'm not watching that. Even though in the U.S., it's free. Doesn't cost you anything to watch it.
Cost you your time. I mean, I could be watching Ma Rainey's Black Bottom on Netflix, which is fantastic.
Yeah, yeah.
And Chadwick Boseman is just incredible.
I love him.
There's a scene where he takes over and for 10 minutes, he's like riveting. And when it's done, you realize you've been holding your breath that whole time. It's an amazing movie.
And especially knowing now that he was riddled with cancer and knew he was probably going to die. Was this his last or second to last movie? It's very sad.
But I mean, Wonder Woman is 2.5 hours long. That's nearly 3 episodes of Peaky Blinders. It's just like...
How many Derry Girls is that?
That's nearly a season of Derry Girls.
I binged Peaky Blinders. I binged Billions. Great shows.
I feel like... I have to say, though, I feel like we've reached the bottom of the barrel. I've watched everything. I finally did watch Schitt's Creek, and that's pretty good. So I'm not completely out of things to watch. But now you're going to make me watch The Expanse. I wanted to read it before I watched it.
You haven't seen it?
No.
Leo?
No. No.
Yeah.
Leo, I have the books, too, and I was going to read those. I just haven't gotten around to it.
Stop the show and go watch it.
Really? That good?
Yep.
Yes.
Yep.
I've watched the confession. I've watched the first episode a couple of times, and it didn't really grab me, which is why I didn't go on. But
it's a slow burn.
Slow burn.
But it's really good.
All right.
It had issues in season three, but seasons one and two are a unit. Incredible. And season four just blew me away. Season five, I'm waiting for. And supposedly season six is the last, at least the last on Amazon.
Right. So have you read the books?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah. Read the book first.
We had the author on the network.
I know.
He was on the triangulation.
I know. Read the book first. Watch the show. Because one of them is going to be a spoiler.
Watch the show.
Interesting.
The show's better than the books.
That's unusual.
Yeah, usually with sci-fi, I want to read the book always because
the authors are involved in the making of the show,
right?
So they're not like out of the loop.
Yeah,
I interviewed the showrunner several months ago for a column about the hand terminals that they use and kind of that as the future of smartphones I have so much material from that interview about. Kind of the creation of it. I may end up later on going back and doing a second piece because it was just really good.
All right. I guess I have an assignment tonight.
Leo, here's a little story. One of the things that they do that makes Expanse so good is they've actually spent a lot of time figuring out how you would move when the ships or the stations are in zero G or not. And they have notes in the readings that say, okay, this is zero G, this is not, this is the orientation of the camera. So they've actually figured it out so that they're not cheating. There is no anti-gravity. There is no transporter. There's no easy way to get from ship to ship without going through an airlock. And it's little details like that if you know about space and if you know about space technology, it's like an inside joke to you. It's amazing.
A lot of CGI?
Yes, but you can't tell.
You can't tell.
Yeah.
Okay.
And
lately, that's been turning me off. It really turned me off in Wonder Woman 84, CGI was visible, and it really was distracting to go, oh yeah, she's on a green stage right now.
Well, that's because they rendered it on a PS2.
Yeah. By the way, how does the Holy Father like his PS5? Is he enjoying it?
Yeah, but Cyberpunk 2077 was really messing up, so he's a little ticked.
Oh, I hate it when that happens. You get all excited about a game, and then, that's just...
Oh, come on, Leo. You know the Pope is a PC gamer. He doesn't do consoles.
Yeah, then he only plays soccer games. He only plays FIFA over and over and over again. I know.
Flight Simulator.
Actually, that was the one thing, of all the things Google did in 2020, the one thing that actually worked was Stadia with Cyberpunk 2077. It was the only way to play that game, which is bizarre. And I'm not sure, I guess you need so much horsepower. You need the Google Cloud to play Cyberpunk 2077.
It wasn't too bad on a PC.
PC was okay. It was just on the consoles, and especially the old. I think it was already PS5 as well.
It ran on the PC until the game-breaking glitches started coming in.
Right, right.
I
hear the Pope likes the flight simulator. He just likes to fly around.
No. He's a big fan of... do you remember that game for the Atari bus?
Yeah.
It was literally Penn Jillette's game where you drive
desert bus. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, Penn and Teller's game.
12-hour drive.
The most boring game ever made. And it's
like, I don't know. You couldn't save it.
Microsoft Truck Simulator has to be in there somewhere because that and the train simulator were just... Oh, my word. You know, so we reviewed the original train simulator on PC Mag, and we showed a screenshot and the amount of abusive letters back in the day we got. Just like, the push rods on that train are completely wrongly...
Don't mess with train people.
You go along a train track. Don't mess with train truck simulator, people. You deliver goods. And it's just like, for goodness sake.
Since it is a slow news week, I think we'll just play Desert Bus for another hour. And then wrap the show up. Here we go, ladies and gentlemen. It's time to ride the desert. But I should turn on the sound.
That's Civ 2 graphics.
Well, this is like a Sega Genesis or something. I know it's an old machine. Are you getting my audio? Not that there is anything really dramatic about Desert Bus that you've just got to hear. There it is. Here we go.
Oh.
Listen to that Sega sound. There's Sega. Penn and Teller. This is, by the way, somebody's recorded a 8-hour playthrough.
This was Rick Rolling before Rick Rolling.
Yeah. Penn and Teller wanted to design the worst game ever. What they didn't expect was that people would actually play it and enjoy it. All right, let me see.
This is actually probably more exciting than CES Virtual is going to be.
Let me put a quarter in the slot. Yeah. Let me put a quarter in. Here we go. Desert Bus.
It's better than the Oregon Trail, so, you know, it's...
That's true.
Wow, look at how video.
You died of disappointment.
Look at how video. Let's just jump right to the exciting part.
Here we go. Minecraft.
That's it. That's the game.
That's it. I mean...
Rick. Sorry, anybody who complains about modern computer games should be made to play that for 3 hours.
Yeah, yeah. The graphics are so remarkable. Our show today brought to you by Mint Mobile. I love my Mint Mobile iPhone SE. I got such a deal on it. And that's really what's cool about Mint Mobile. All this year, after everything we've been through, saving money's got to be at the top of everyone's resolution list, right? So why are you paying $70, $80, $90, $100 a month for wireless service? What are you doing? Switch to Mint Mobile. It's the easiest way to save. And they plans start at just $15 a month. And I'm not just, you know, you get for $15 a month unlimited nationwide talk and text and high-speed data on the nation's largest 5G network. It's a great way to get premium wireless as little as $15 a month. And how do they do it? Well, they're online only. They don't have to pay for stores. Eliminating the cost of retail means they can pass significant savings on to you. And by the way, if you're not 100% satisfied, Mint Mobile has you covered with their 7-day money-back guarantee. I actually ended up going for the $25 a month plan, which is 12 gigabytes of high-speed 5G data plus unlimited nationwide talk and text. That's an amazing deal for a third of what I'm paying for the same service from T-Mobile. To get your new wireless plan for just $15 a month and get the plan shipped to your door free, go to mintmobile.com/twit. mintmobile.com/twit. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month. mintmobile.com/twit. Thank you, Mint Mobile. Let's see. This was a very sad New Year's Eve for me because we had to say goodbye to two of my bestest friends, Farmville and Flash.
Wah, wah.
They kind of went together, didn't they? I feel like they're buried in the same grave. Adobe killed Flash finally. And Farmville, which was based on Flash, I guess kind of had to go along with it. Did any of you play Farmville? I was badly addicted.
I never got into it because I recognized immediately that that's the kind of game that would destroy my life.
Yeah, and you were right.
Yeah, I did it for a couple of months, and then I realized I was spending way too much time doing it. But, you know, honestly, saying goodbye to Farmville and Flash, it's just kill it. You know,
I mean, seriously. Just kill it.
I got so sick on Patch Tuesdays of writing stories about this is the latest critical vulnerability in Flash. No, this one's even bigger.
Oh, God, you Flash know? Was a nightmare. Just a nightmare. But Farmville was a nightmare in its own way, too. I spent a lot of time farming corn. I remember one morning my wife got up. She said, "What are you doing?" She said, "You're farming, aren't you?" I said, "Yeah." So why don't you knit a sweater? At least you'd have something at the end of the day. And that's really true. I really recognize. But I have a weakness because after Farmville, I played Wii Rule. After Wii Rule, Simpsons tapped out. And now I'm doing Animal Crossing. And I find I'm doing the same damn farming on Animal Crossing.
It's the same thing.
It's the same thing.
Of course you are. Yes. The formula works, Leo. Of course they're going to do it again and again and again.
Oh, my God.
And there are sequels to Farmville you could still play, right, that are aren't based on Flash. There are still
the sequels
Farmville
are called Animal Crossing and
Six. Yeah, I just described them all. Yeah. I think this was probably, for most of us, our first experience of dark patterns and evil addictions. And I know that I always know with one of these games that I played it too much when I'm no longer enjoying it. At first, you know, the first few weeks you enjoy it. It's fun. But when you kind of grit your teeth and go, oh, I gotta, that corn's going to go bad if I don't harvest it. And you fire the thing up and you're just like, why am I doing this to myself?
Sims was the same way. The Sims and Sim City.
Yep.
You know, your city would decline, your Sims would die, and sometimes you get sadistic and you would want to kill your Sims, you know, slowly. And so there's a lot of games like that where you kind of you cannot stop, and if you do stop, something dies.
Actually, in Animal Crossing, if you don't play, your house gets filled with cockroaches and spider. I'm not kidding, and spider webs. Your crops rot, and you can go in and clean it up and start over. But your neighbors, because you have other people on your island, other animals on your island, apparently they're a little cross with you because you haven't been there in a while.
coming back to what you were saying about dark patterns, Leo, I thought it was interesting that Farmville and Facebook both really took off at around the same time because they played onto each other's strengths.
Yes.
And yeah, you're constantly checking Facebook and, oh, may as well check on how my farm is doing in the meantime. But yeah, I mean, as Dwight says, it goes way back to The Sims. You could possibly even take it back further. If you left Civilization running for, you know, when you were on the screen, you would come back and find barbarians and ravage the kingdom before you'd say boo to a goose. So yes.
Farmville was named by Time Magazine in 2010 is one of the 50 worst inventions of all time.
I'd go with that. Well, I mean, it's exactly the cycle of addiction. Addiction starts off with you do something because it makes
fun.
You feel good.
Then you do it.
Then you do
have
something
to.
Because you feel bad if you don't do it. Yeah. Then you feel bad even if you do it. That's exactly Farmville and Facebook.
Yeah. There really is something to be said. And maybe I should have seen this more as a larger warning about Facebook way back when. Because I honestly feel like Facebook is pretty much just Farmville.
It's digital crack, but I mean, this has been going on for quite some time. I mean, if you go back to the 80s, I mean, Elite was one of the first games that really crippled people in terms of addiction. The BBC decided to do a news story on Elite because the news editor came in and found 9 out of 20 of his journalists were playing it, and the others were asking them how to get on as well. So, you know, it's these things that computer software, you know, computer games and narcotics have an awful lot in common, and they're increasingly designed to hit those same pleasure centers.
Yeah. Really good.
Well, how many hours of productivity have been killed simply by Microsoft Solitaire?
It. Yeah,
on Windows.
Sweeper.
You know, or Minesweeper, or Tetris.
I have to
Tetris
ask.
Tetris was probably
Leo,
the most.
How many donuts did you buy?
Game.
Oh, a lot. But the thing that really frosted my cornflakes was at one point my Simpsons Tapped Out town crashed. And I had a credit for $300 worth of donuts still. But my town crashed, and I lost everything in the great crash of probably 2015. And you'd think I'd have learned the lesson. At least with Animal Crossing, there's no more to buy. So they just addict you for no good reason, not to make money, just because they can, more than anything else, which is kind of sad. Very good article in the New Republic by Siva Vaidyanathan, who is a sociologist and wrote a book about Facebook. The article I recommend to everybody is Making Sense of the Facebook Menace. Can the largest media platform in the world ever be made safe for democracy? Spends a fairly long article describing the issues with Facebook and then trying to come up with some solutions. You know, for what do you do with Facebook? You don't want the government to shut them down. You certainly don't want them to be split up. Then that just creates more Facebooks. It's like a hydra. The greatest threat, this is the paragraph I thought was important and really is timely. Perhaps the greatest threat that Facebook poses in concert with other, by the way, he points out, other digital media platforms, devices, and the whole global media ecosystem is corrosion over time. What Facebook does or does not amplify or delete in the moment matters very little. He's talking about what Facebook blocks and whether this should be allowed or that. He says that doesn't matter in a diverse and tumultuous world, but the fact that Facebook, the leading player in the global media ecosystem, undermines our collective ability to distinguish what is true or false, who or what should be trusted, and our abilities to deliberate soberly across differences and distances is profoundly corrosive. This is the gaping flaw in the platform's design that will demand much more radical interventions than better internal policies or even aggressive antitrust enforcement. I feel like that's true. I don't know what the answer is. He talks about some.
I think it's true, but you could also say it's true about Fox News, for example.
No, he's in fact saying that. He's saying it's the global media. He says really Facebook is a part of a larger global media ecosystem that has had over the last, and I think a lot of it's because of the internet, maybe cable news, but just this, we were inundated constantly with information, and the upshot of it is we're no longer able to distinguish good from bad, useful from not useful, trustworthy versus not trustworthy. It's just a mass of information that we don't have any biological way to process. We talk about
We're not inundated by information. That's the problem. We're inundated by advertising. We're inundated by catchphrases. We are inundated by this desire to have width over depth, because depth doesn't sell. If you say, I'm going to spend the next hour teaching you everything you need to know about Brexit, nobody will tune in. If you give them 5 sound bites that they can use at a dinner party, they'll tune in every single time you broadcast.
Well, that's exactly right. Yeah. That's exactly right. And of course, because of the very fast, powerful feedback loops that that technology has created, everybody who creates content knows that and knows pretty well about what it is that creates that. And so there's no incentive to create long-form, boring pieces that nobody's going to read.
Well, this is something that came out of the Brexit investigations into social media was that, you know, social media wasn't necessarily being used to change people's minds directly with targeted advertising. What they were doing was testing out various keywords and key phrases to see what really got people fired up, and then spamming those out across the entire populace. So, you know, make Britain free again and you know, regain control and the rest of it. These were all put out to various different social groups and sociological types before being spammed out on a general thing. So you're right. People are absolutely using this to push their message, but they're just doing it in a very, very efficient way. And I think therein lies the problem.
Yeah. The algorithm is the problem, whether it's a computer algorithm or a human algorithm, because there certainly is. You probably experienced this, Dwight, pressure to create articles that people click on.
Sure. You know, you mentioned the whole idea of no one's going to pay any attention to being told for an hour about Brexit, but they will if it's entertaining. And you could have depth and it be entertaining. That is hard to do, but you could do it. Mm-hmm. And so I think that what's happened is that people have insisted on having essentially icing on everything, icing on your steak, basically. You've got to be able You have to be able to, you know, make something palatable and entertaining. Right. There's a really interesting book, and some of his theories are referenced in this by Neil Postman. A book called "Amusing Ourselves to Death."
Excellent.
And it was written in the era of television, but a lot of it applies to now.
Well, he was a harbinger of what was to come.
Right. You know, he was great.
He didn't even. He had no idea how bad it was going to get. hey, good news for Tesla. They said they would deliver 500,000 vehicles in 2018, and they did in 2020. That's still a lot of electric vehicles. 499,550. Hello, yeah. Twit. Hi, nice to see you. Good to see you. Anything to say about that? Elon Musk, is he still the second richest man in the world? He's certainly the most bizarre man in the world.
I do worry that he gets into Grimes' stash a bit too often, although she might have pulled back. I mean, look, Tesla, Elon is wonderful in many ways. He's revolutionized rocket transport, made electric cars sexy. But there's a German word whose name escapes me. Is someone who is brilliant in one area and a complete nincompoop in another.
That's it. And, that's the word. I need that word.
Idiot savant?
No, he's not an idiot savant, though, exactly. No.
But, you know, he's now a Texan.
Yes, he's moved. He's moved.
Or at least he lives here. He has to earn his boots. But he's supposedly he's shacked up somewhere in Austin. He's not. You know, I don't think he's going to buy a place, and I think he's going to be kind of, you know, a mobile billionaire. He spends a lot of time down in Boca Chica. That's where the Starship is being worked on. But, he's now a Texan, which just blows my mind.
The German word you are looking for is
fachidiot.
Yes.
What?
Yeah, F-A-C-H-I-D-I-O-T.
It means English a highly skilled idiot? Specialist who's an idiot in another area.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, Dwight, you're now, Texas is now preparing for an influx of tech firms on one level. I mean, HPE is moving over there. Oracle is moving over there. Right. Larry Ellison isn't. He's going to just hang out in his private Hawaiian island and let the peons go.
Yeah.
How is that going to work?
What's interesting is that Texas has already had kind of an influx of tech talent and expansion, particularly in Austin, less so in Houston. I probably will run later in January after I'm gone. I just did an interview with Michael Dell that will run in our Monday business publication.
Oh, cool. That's exciting.
And one of the things that he told me, and this isn't really news because everybody knows it, but he hears from a lot of technology companies who are interested in moving to Texas. And that
can I just say, though, I'm cynical. Does it have anything to do with the lack of a state income tax?
I don't think that's a cynical reason. I think that's the reason.
Yeah.
I think it's cheaper to do business here.
Well, you get to keep more of your money.
Yes. And also it's cheaper. Salaries are lower. Land costs are lower.
So it's just a classic capitalist move.
Yes.
You know.
Yes.
But you notice this in both HP's and Oracle's statements, none of them mentioned tax, none of them mentioned salary levels. It was all about increasing the opportunities for more flexible working for our employees and all the bullshit that, you know, you've come to expect from a corporate press department. But that really is what it's about. It's about money. It's not about quality of life.
And they're also also a right to work state, right? So you can't unionize. Right.
So I interviewed the CEO of HPE. And one of the things he said, you know, yes, the cost of doing business is lower in Texas. The one downside to it is probably the biggest downside is that while in Austin you certainly have a critical mass of talent, in other parts of the state you may not. Houston, you are growing that more and more. It's probably the most diverse crop of talent in the state in Houston. But it is you have to get that critical mass here that you have now in Silicon Valley before I think you really have a lot of people moving.
Yeah.
The thing is, though, it's not sustainable. We know it's not sustainable because we've seen this pattern over and over again. You get that critical mass, you attract all these companies. Eventually, you have to start raising the quality of life across the city, which means you have to increase the taxes or start charging taxes in order to pay for everything. At that point, these companies will up and go someplace else.
Well, what's also really interesting is in the Texas legislature, which is controlled by the GOP and all of the top leaders of the state, the lieutenant governor, the governor, the attorney general are all very conservative Republicans. They all warn about the Californianization of Texas. And in fact, in the upcoming legislature, there is a lot of talk about reducing the local control that states and counties have, because they're doing things, they want to do things that look suspiciously like California.
Mm-hmm.
But what's going to happen is you have more and more of these companies here who expect that level of service and that level of amenity from their government. And
but they're not paying for it.
And they're not paying for it.
They're not paying for it.
Well, I mean,
so it's going to change Texas. And I don't think you're going to have a reckoning at some point.
Yeah.
I mean, my understanding is that Austin, for example, has just as big a homeless problem as San Francisco. It's just shifted further out into the suburbs. And sooner or later, people are going to be saying, well, hang on, I left drug-addicted homeless people in San Francisco. I went to Austin. I've still got them. Sooner or later, we're going to have to pay to clean this stuff up.
Come to Houston.
I mean, oh, come on. I went to Houston in the compact days and lovely people, but the climate's an absolute killer. I mean, even in February, the humidity rates was in the 80s, and you can't survive without air conditioning there.
Did you grow up in Houston, Dwight? Are you there because that's where you have always lived? Or
I've always lived in the South, but I've lived most of my adult life in Texas, and all of my adult life in Texas, and most of it in Houston.
Yeah.
And the climate is what it is, as we say, and air conditioning is everywhere, and air conditioning is just a fact of life. And so, you know, you kind of the one thing about Houston that kind of has more issues now is that we've been having these storms that cause horrendous flooding.
You've covered up all
climate
the dirt.
Change. And I think that as much as city leaders and the Greater Houston Partnership, which is what we call the Chamber of Commerce here, as much as they want to spin it that, you know, Houston has a great quality of life. It has a great quality of life until there's 30 inches of water in your front yard.
Yeah.
Yes.
But we have short memories for disasters, right? Trust me, this place is going to burn down one summer, and it's just going to be, oh, yeah, didn't we have wildfires last year and the year before?
We had two earthquakes here in down in the Bay Area on New Year's Eve and New Year's Day.
Oh, they were little
okay.
temblers.
Yeah, no, these
like
were
3.6. You don't even wake up for 3.6.
To locals, that is basically, oh, the next door neighbor has just dropped something.
Yeah.
But, you know, as someone who didn't grow up with this, it was just an after.
Oh, wait till you get a real one, Ian, then you can talk. You get a nice 7 or 8, you're going to. It's so weird because you don't expect things are moving that shouldn't be.
Yeah, my boss was here in 89 for the big one there. And he saw something he'd never seen before, which was shop front plate glass windows flexing in and out.
Oh, yeah.
And it was just like, okay, maybe moving out here wasn't such a
bad thing. That's disorienting. That's really disorienting because the ground isn't supposed to move. It's supposed to be solid.
Or elevated freeways that wobble to do this. I've seen video of that.
Oh, I was there.
Oh, yeah. I spoke to somebody who's – oh, sorry, after you.
No, no, go ahead, please.
Oh, no, I spoke to somebody who was local in my old pub, and she was up on a crane, you know, one of those tall cranes in 89. And she's if I hadn't have been strapped in, I would have been thrown out of this thing because we were swaying, meters on either side, or feet, as she would have said in Freedom Units, on either side. It's just – but everywhere has natural disasters.
There's always something.
California and the West Coast has its earthquakes. Japan has them as well. You know, China has killing smog. There's nowhere that's perfect. And let's face it, the climate's not getting any better in the short term. So, make do with
my mom was in the Transamerica building, and the building continued to sway for about 6 or 7 minutes.
Well, it's designed to, though. That's why it's a good place to be, because it's on rollers, believe it or not. It's supposed to move. You don't want a building that doesn't move, because then what happens is it breaks.
It cracks. Yeah.
Well, it's like, have you seen the Twin Towers in Malaysia? Kuala Lumpur. Yeah, there they've got a massive counterweight.
Yeah,
and you just watch it swaying in earthquakes, and it's awe-inspiring.
Yeah.
But it's not really a solution which you'd have everywhere.
Yeah. Let's take a little break. We'll have a final segment with this nice panel who has put up with me because there's nothing to talk about. I'll find some news. Father Robert Ballester, the digital Jesuit, from his No drinking, Father. His from his professional podcast studio high atop Vatican City. How, what floor are you on up there?
Actually, this is my studio one. Studio five is on the roof. This is down in the bowels.
Oh, excuse me. So are you in the catacombs?
Kind of, actually. Yeah, it is a bit maze-like down here.
Wow.
This is typically the studio we use for multi-person recording, but I had to move all the equipment down when I went back to the United States, and I haven't had a chance to move back up yet.
Nice. It's still a beautiful studio. The lighting, everything, the sound quality, it's great.
Good. I do like it.
Yeah, you still did a great job.
Aside from the hair.
You know, I was going to say, either your hair got more curly or the wig is not doing well in the humidity. I'm not sure which it is.
This is 6 months.
Oh, look at you.
We don't get a barber here for another week.
Oh, or as they say, barbieri.
I call him Vincenzo.
Vincenzo il barbieri.
His name is not Vincenzo.
But it's good to call him that. Doesn't bother him, does it? Does it? Podcasting from a sepulchre, it's Father Robert Palliser. Also with us, podcasting from his temporary home at the Houston Chronicle, surrounded by blankets, which is the last thing you need in Houston, I would guess. Dwight Silverman, HoustonChronicle.com/
In the podcasting studio that we have here on the third floor, probably the last time I'll be in here because I'm out of here on the 15th and with Forbes on the 1st.
That's so exciting. Now, you're going to be working remotely. You don't have to go to the Forbes offices.
No. And there's no at the moment expectation for me to travel, although I suspect that once we have a real CES, possibly next year, I may be expected to
go
then. But I could do it out of Houston.
Let's all meet at CES next year. You don't have to go, Ian, but everybody, let's all meet.
I'd go for a meeting.
Wouldn't that be fun?
I would totally go.
Wouldn't that be fun? I would just like to see y'all. I'll be wearing a mask. Maybe I'll be wearing a full body suit with a blower in the back, but I'll be there.
Actually, you say that. Did you hear about the outbreak they've had down in, I think it's San Jose at Kaiser?
Yes.
And that was traced back to somebody wearing one of those inflatable Tyrannosaurus things while having COVID, and the fan was blowing all the particles everywhere around.
It's about as bad as you can get. I just imagine this inflatable Tyrannosaurus. Actually, was it a Christmas tree? It was an inflatable.
I'm not entirely sure, but
inflatable something. And I think 43 people, got emergency room staff got infected, and I feel so bad for them because they were wearing, I'm sure, PPE and all of that stuff. You know, every time they went in the ward and all that, and then they're having a little Christmas party and some dope. An inflatable Christmas tree blows COVID all over them. It's terrible.
Basically, it was a homemade virus dispersal device.
Exactly. you couldn't. It's so stupid. Ian Thompson's also here from theregister.com. Used to be theregister.go.uk. I try to get people when they're drinking. This is my new thing. Theregister.com.
Hey, tea only.
Tea only. Delicious tea.
I have a dram afterwards. So.
Oh, that's good. That's good. We will talk about drone because we got the new drone regulations because we got the drone father here, the quad father. But first, a word from our sponsor, ExpressVPN. Somebody asked me the other day on the radio show, I don't go anywhere. What do I need a VPN for? I said, yeah, no, it's true. When we first started using VPNs is when we realized that every time we used an open Wi-Fi access point at the coffee shop or at the airport, we were on a network with other people we didn't know, that they see what we were doing, but also the people who provided the access point, they could see everything we were doing. It seemed only prudent to have a VPN. And that's really when VPNs started to take off. But it's also the case that even when you're home, a VPN is a great way to protect your privacy, to keep you secure, but also keep the information about what you're doing away from your internet service provider. The guy said, yeah, but I use incognito mode. I said, that doesn't hide you from anything. that only just doesn't keep a history. That's not privacy. You need an encrypted VPN. Plus, there's the thing that we've all gone through where you know, we've watched every Netflix show available to us. Wouldn't it be nice if you could watch Netflix in the UK and see all those Doctor Who episodes, or Netflix in Tokyo and see all the anime episodes? Well, you can with ExpressVPN. Now, remember, a VPN is only as good as the company providing it. Your privacy and your security are protected with ExpressVPN because they care about you and they make sure that they do not log you. In fact, they even invented a server technology they call Trusted Server that runs in RAM only, sandbox, so it can't write to the hard drive. And the minute you close the VPN connection, it disappears, and there's no trace of your presence. And we know that's the case because they get regular audits from PricewaterhouseCoopers. So we know that they are not tracking you, that you are private. Now, of course, there are free and very cheap VPNs out there, but it costs money to run a good VPN. If you want a VPN that's fast, that lets you emerge anywhere in the world, that lets you watch HD video, it's going to cost you a little bit. I think ExpressVPN is a great deal, around $7 a month. And it does it without slowing down your connection. It does it without logging your presence. It gives you true privacy, true security. And, oh, by the way, Doctor Who episodes from the UK Netflix. It's the number one rated VPN, not just by me, but by CNET, by Wired. They do everything right. Stop handing your personal data over to ISPs and other tech giants who mine your activity, sell off your information. I put ExpressVPN on the router. That way everybody in the house is protected. Protect yourself with a VPN I trust to keep me private and secure online. ExpressVPN.com/twit. ExpressVPN.com/twit. We're going to get you the best deal. When you sign up for the 12-month plan, you'll get an extra 3 months free. That's like a 25% discount. That really is the best way to do this. ExpressVPN.com/twit. I trust them. You can too. ExpressVPN.com/twit. We are going to get back to the news, such as it is, in just a second. But before we do, I do want to take a look back, because this was an interesting week, and we've made a little video for you. I hope you enjoy it. Watch. This is what the robots are going to look like when they dance on our graves.
Oh, good. I'm glad I didn't play this on the show.
Jeez, that is people. An appropriate comment.
Yeah. There is also a wall between them and the humans. I don't think that's by accident.
Previously on Twit, Mac Break Weekly.
In many ways, this was a banner year for Apple. I mean, they ended the year with a release of new computers that just changed everything.
Hands-on tech.
It is time to go hands-on with the three big $99 smart speakers. You've got the HomePod Mini, you've got the Echo 4th generation, and you've got... the Nest Audio. It is time to talk speakers.
All about Android.
It's the end of year in review. That's right, 2020. What a year it's been. We walk you through all of the biggest Android news, hardware, disappointments, and our favorite apps of the year.
This year, right. I could not put down the Note 20 Ultra 5G. I could not put down the Z Fold 2 when I had it. I could not put down my Z Flip. Like, seriously, Samsung, what is happening? I want to hate you so much, yet I can't. Like, you're doing it right.
Twit.
Quit doing it so right, Samsung.
Weird. Jeez.
Wishing you a happy new year.
I don't know if you've been following this, Father Robert, but I know you are... Well, we call you the quad father, a big drone fan. What rules have been changed now with the FAA?
Right. So if you've got anything that's less than 250 grams, which would be a lot of the hobbyist craft, the toys, the little racers that have FPV, there's no change. You can still run those any way you want. They've basically built the new regulations based on how much damage it could cause if it fell out of the sky. Above 250 grams, your craft now has to be running a locator. Now, the original draft was that they wanted you to connect to your phone, which would broadcast to a national registry to say that you were flying and where you were flying. That got nixed. Now all you need is some sort of transmitter on your device that either uses Wi-Fi or Bluetooth so that anything in the area knows that there's craft in the area. I think that's the easiest way to sum up all the rules. Now, as you get bigger and bigger, you start getting into commercial use, and that's controlled by the FAA.
Right.
But they really didn't want to regulate everything because the FAA just doesn't have the manpower to do that.
So you have a little time. The new rules don't take effect for a couple of months.
Right.
Drone operators are currently required to obtain a waiver if you want to fly one at night or over people who aren't involved in the operation of the drone. Drone manufacturers will have 18 months to build these remote ID systems into their drones, and then you'll have an additional year to buy one. So you've got, really, in a way, you've got 2.5 years before you have to worry about this. Is that right?
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. Yeah. Right. And remember, you can retrofit. So if you have something right now, you can add an ID system to it. Also, if you let's use DJI, since DJI is probably the most popular one out there. Everyone's seen them. If you've got the small ones, like the Mavic Airs, they're under 250 grams, so this does not apply. But if you've got the larger ones that can carry like Red cameras,
yeah, Henry uses
100%.
The Pro. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah. That you do have to register.
He's gotten into lately FPV.
That's fun.
he has to wear a VR helmet while he's doing it. Right.
Right. So you've got a camera at the front that's broadcasting on a different frequency than the control signal. And you can see through that camera through the front of your craft. It's a great way to pilot. It is a lot of fun. You get so much more control because rather than you trying to figure out which way your craft is turned and which control input you have to do in order to make it go the way you want, it's literally like sitting in a car.
Now, last month, DJI, the Chinese manufacturer of the most popular drones, there are many companies, but DJI is one of the biggest, was added to the Department of Commerce's entity list, saying it's a national security concern and banning U.S. companies from exporting technology to DJI. Does that...
Yeah, I...
Eh.
I mean, okay. Look. Anytime you have a company that is taking your location data, it's going to be a national security risk. And that's basically what DJI has been doing.
It's so funny because we're on the one hand, the FAA is requiring it.
Correct.
On the other hand, the Commerce Department is saying, oh, wait a minute, you can't do that. They're Chinese.
Mm-hmm. Remember, the only reason why DJI started building that capability into their craft was because there was a different set of regulations that came up. What, 5 years ago?
Right. We were worried about airports.
In which they were required to geofence.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. So you still be able to buy DJI stuff? What does the company say about not being able to buy U.S. components? They probably never used them anyway.
I mean, the quote-unquote U.S. components are all manufactured over there anyway. So,
Okay.
We don't manufacture any drone components here. Okay. Nothing. We do some design, but... The boards, the auto stabilization technology, the motors, those are all made in China.
Isn't that funny? How's your Dogecoin doing, by the way? I hear it reached a penny.
It's at the funny point is it took this long to get to a penny, and now all the Dogecoin aficionados are saying, okay, next month we'll be at a dollar. I'm like, no.
Doge gone wild. It was a meme. Which you bought into. How many Dogecoin do you have? You have millions, right?
I have a million or two.
Yeah.
Well, I had a million or two.
What? You sold them?
I cashed out the vast majority because I had forgotten about them. And I put them into an exchange. And then I moved it over to Bitcoin when Bitcoin was at 13,000.
It's now, by the way, at 34,000.
Oh, we're into bubble territory
now
again.
Now it's at 32,000.
Oh, it went back down?
No, 27,000. Oh, no, 40,000.
Wait a minute. 40.
It's just.
Yeah.
$33,167.50 as of this moment. Is that a bubble? What is going on with Bitcoin?
A lot of people have been pushing it. Scott Galloway has had a big thing about it. I do have to wonder what happened to all those Mt. Gox Bitcoins because they're worth. Seriously, huge amounts of money at the moment. But honestly, Bitcoin is a speculative instrument. It's not like it's actually used for anything other than holding it and speculating.
Well, neither's gold. What's the industrial value of an ounce of gold? It ain't $30,000.
Well, actually, okay, gold maybe, but silver, so there's still a severe silver shortage because it's, you know, best conductor of electricity and the rest of it.
Right.
So, you know.
You can buy things with Bitcoin. I mean, there are companies that will take them. There's a luxury car dealer here who kind of touted that he was going to accept Bitcoin for Ferraris or something.
7.85 Bitcoin burning a hole in my wallet.
Back in 2017 when I did a story on Houston people who were mining Ethereum by buying up graphics cards. Remember that?
Yeah, yeah.
I put $20 in Bitcoin just so I could have the fun of doing it. And this is what it is now. It's at $60.
You're rich.
Yeah.
You're rich.
Yes. I've tripled my money. And
should have bought
just
more.
Just remember the little people.
remember about Bitcoin, though, is there's always a story about how this business is now going to accept Bitcoin or you can buy. It is a terrible device for transactions. It is a horrible device for transactions because of the volatility.
It's incredibly clunky.
What it is, it's an investment tool. It's a financial tool. It's a way for you to try to grow money. But trying to buy something with a Bitcoin, the going from the actual accepting of the transaction to getting the money, because that has to go through a financial institution, you could see, depending on the size of the transaction, several thousands of dollars difference. Either positive or negative. That's a horrible way to make a transaction.
Yeah.
Also, I just do want to make this point because I think it's important. The amount of power and processing time being used to mine these coins at the moment,
it's the size
of a small country.
Yeah.
So for all these people, I'm so green, I'm so environmentally friendly, and now I'm mining Bitcoin. So, you know, there is a big carbon footprint to these.
Yeah.
So ethically, it's kind of a dodgy area.
I read somewhere, I suppose it's still true, that the amount of energy used by Bitcoin in effect wipes out the net gain of all the solar panels installed.
Pretty much.
So,
it's just insane.
By the way, we have to throw this in here to all the Bitcoin stans. I get it. It's great. You're at home. You're making money. I'm not knocking that. We're just explaining the underlying technology and costs of the infrastructure. If you don't say that, you'll get a lot of very angry people saying you don't get it.
Oh, to hell with them. Come on. I've had people saying that to me since, you know, the mid-90s. So, no, it's, you know, honestly, it could have been so much better. You know, if you look at what the possibilities were, but it's just become a speculative instrument at the moment, as far as I can see.
Yeah, yeah. And leave it to the Japanese to come up with a solution for space junk. They're planning to build wooden satellites. You make them out of wood. This is a Japanese company, Sumitomo Forestry, in conjunction with Kyoto University. They hope they will be launching the world's first satellites made out of wood in 2023. Because, of course, the wood burns up when the satellite re-enters. I think you still have to put some electronics in there. I'm just thinking you can make them out of wood, but you still have to have some circuit boards in there, don't you?
Well, it's interesting they released this news over the traditional Christmas and New Year slow period. Because if you want a satellite to do anything, you can't do it with wood. You've got to have electronics in there. Stop your sniggering.
I do it with wood myself. I'm a bit of an amateur woodworker.
You know, when it comes, I'm not even going there.
Okay.
Honestly, when you've got to put stuff into orbit, weight matters. And wood is heavier than, say, very thin aluminium. And they both burn up in the atmosphere anyway.
Correct.
So, you know, it's one of those, it's a cute idea. But, you know,
the space junk problem isn't burning up in the atmosphere. Anything you shove into the atmosphere is going to mostly burn up. The problem is when it's orbiting, and wood or aluminum is going to be traveling at 3 kilometers per second to stay in a geostationary orbit. And it doesn't matter if it's wood or aluminum. If it hits you at that speed, you die. If it hits a satellite at that speed, it will destroy that satellite. So it's not really a solution. It really isn't.
It's kind of cute, though.
It is interesting, though.
It's kind of a bento box satellite.
But I see, I interviewed Don Kessler about this last year now. He came up with the Kessler thing, situation where satellite hit satellite, and then we end up blinding.
Oh, yeah. That was the premise for the great Neal Stephenson novel Seven Eves.
Yes.
And Sandra Bullock's Gravity.
Yeah.
And Gravity. Although Neal Stephenson still can't do endings, as that book showed. But
I liked it.
Oh, yeah. It's cute. But he put out a very this I hadn't realized. Geostationary satellites aren't pushed back to Earth. They're pushed out to a parking orbit further out. So we're potentially building another band of stuff around Earth's orbit, which is going to come back and haunt us when we actually try and get rid of these things. So, I mean, ideally, we need to build space elevators, as Arthur C. Clarke put out, and build our communications around those. But that's a century away. So,
imagine an alien civilization visiting us in a million years and saying, they've got bamboo in orbit. What the heck is wrong with
them? It was Neil deGrasse Tyson who said his biggest fear was that aliens have visited us, taken a look at us, and we'll come back in 10,000 years when they're not barbarians.
I totally believe that.
There is, I have to say, a signal that has arrived from the Proxima Centauri system and one of their exoplanets that's very Earth-like that seems fairly well organized. It's here's from Astronomy Magazine: the best candidate for an extraterrestrial message in 42 years is probably man-made, but what if it's not? Researchers heard the signal at the 64-meter Parkes Radio Telescope in Australia back in April and May of 2019. The radio missions seemed well organized, not spontaneous, not random. They're analyzing it like crazy right now. And as is often the case with these kinds of transmissions, when they're picked up it could be an Earth bounce or some sort of thing. BLC-1, they're dubbing it Breakthrough Listen Candidate 1.
Well, it was Arthur C. Clarke who said there are two possibilities in life, one that we are alone in the universe and one that we're not. And both are equally frightening when you really think about them.
Yeah. Yeah.
By the way, they've decoded the signal.
Yeah.
And when they decoded it, it said, I am the deposed emperor of Alpha Centauri, and I would like to give you $200 million. Just give me your banking information.
I thought it was going to be level one achieved. Would you care to play again?
Ladies and gentlemen, what a fun game this has been. I appreciate you helping me pretend that something happened this week in technology.
Oh, could we do Ticketmaster?
Oh, what happened with Ticketmaster?
Ticketmaster got fined $10 million.
Oh, they were hacking their competitors.
One of their senior employees was hacking his former employer. And I just love this story because, okay, they would fine them $10 million, but it's Ticketmaster. So why not charge them an extra $15
million? Handling fees. It's handling fees.
The convenience fee.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Everyone hates these scumbags. They are the total worst, middle management type. Anyway, I just wanted to get that out there because having been shafted by Ticketmaster for many years, it's nice to see them get to pay something for a while.
They repeatedly, according to the Justice Department's settlement, had Ticketmaster employees use stolen passwords to gain access to non-public ticketing information from a rival firm, Songkick. They hired somebody from Songkick. And he had a password, so they were able to log in doing that. Yeah, it's not the nastiest hack ever.
Well, no, it's not really hacking.
When your industrial espionage comes down to I had a password, that's lazy.
yeah, that's lazy. That's lazy. Ladies and gentlemen, I am lazy. I want to go home and watch The Expanse. That's what I want to do.
Do it.
Thank you, Ian Thompson, for being here from theregister.com.
A pleasure as ever.
The next time we see you, you will be mustache and mohawkless.
Yes, yes, this is coming off in 2 days' time after I've scared the living bejesus out of the news team. And then the mustache, I'm going to be cheerfully getting rid of. Dwight, I admire your sartorial choices, but I cannot live with this thing anymore.
Oh, come on. Think of all the fun you can have taking little bits of it at a time. You could come on, you could come on every week with just a slightly smaller mustache till it ends up being one of those little Hitler mustaches in the middle.
Well, there was a British comedian who spent a year with a Hitler mustache trying to, because Charlie Chaplin wore one.
Sure.
And he used to be very popular.
Until Hitler ruined it was a very popular style.
Hitler's just ruined everything on that front. Know, you know, it's just, can you imagine being the Hitler family and it's like, come to Happy Hitler's restaurant.
Yeah, you can't even use that name anymore.
No one's calling their kids Adolf either, but you know.
Is it called a toothbrush mustache?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
I thought I heard that, but
that's
I could
the
have
name.
Been. Yeah, it's a toothbrush mustache.
Yeah.
Oliver Hardy had one. Charlie Chaplin.
You might
want to bring it back, Ian. You could be the guy that brought back the
toothbrush. I'm trying to remember the guy's name, but I am tempted by the little, you know, the razor thin mustache. Who was it who had those?
Yeah.
It wasn't Noel Coward, was it? Or Some American
David Niven.
Films.
David Niven.
David Niven.
David
stuff.
Niven.
That's
David
it.
Niven.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. The moon's a balloon. Yeah. Yeah. So I'm thinking about trying that out for a day or so, but I'm just so keen to get rid of
as
it.
As long as you've got the stash, you should try some different variants.
Play with it.
Yeah. Play with it.
The amount of people who said, oh, good grief, Ian, you look like a younger Ron Jeremy. It's just like, I could live without that kind of association.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you, Ian. I appreciate it. Thank you also to Dwight Silverman, who the next time we speak will be a Forbes columnist. That's very exciting. Right now, though, he's at TechCrunch, HoustonChronicle.com/TechBurger, which is better than TechCrunch, really. TechBurger.
I start with Forbes on February 1st and still trying to map out exactly what it will look like, but I'm really excited about it. And I want to say that I really want to extend my appreciation to the Chronicle, who kind of made me what I am today. They gave me the opportunity to do this, and it was, you know, every journalist wants to make a difference and help people with what they do, and they allowed me to do that, and so I'm really grateful for them.
How long have you been there?
I've been here since 1990, so it was 2020 was my 30
years. Wow.
That's congratulations.
And I did not think that when I came here that, you know, I was, you know, journalism is typically you hop from one paper to another, but I settled in and liked it, and Houston actually became a really nice place to be, and so I have stayed, and I will still be in Houston. I'll be working for Forbes out of here.
Great. Thank you also, Father Robert Ballasaire. We miss you, our digital Jesuit. He is in Rome, but when in Rome, I don't know. Eat the pizza.
I'm not even sure what we do in Rome anymore.
What is it?
Eat bad the bad eggs. Looks of it.
Yeah. Anything you want to plug? Are you going to do a podcast? I'm still on your Minecraft server. You're still doing that?
Yeah. Actually, we're expanding the Minecraft servers into other gaming servers. We've already brought up Rust. They're going to be doing a couple of like Team Fortress 2 type stuff. It basically, they've been asking the players, what do you want to see? That's what we've been rolling up. Here, I've been doing the 10 days of Uber Geek Christmas. I've just been giving away tech gear. That's been
I
kind
saw
of fun.
That it's, on your Twitter.
It's
feed.
Nice to get back into the game.
Yeah,
but yeah, most of the work I do, I am now behind the camera instead of in front of it, and that suits me just fine.
Nice. Twitter handle is PadreSJ. Mm-hmm. Thank you everybody for joining us this week. It's been a fun festival, getting together with old friends, talking about good times. We'll be back next week. Maybe between now and then, there'll be some tech news we can talk about. We do Twit on Sunday afternoons, 2:30 p.m. Pacific, 5:30 Eastern, 22:30 UTC. As with all our shows, we stream kind of a live behind-the-scenes stream of us making the shows. That's at twit.tv/live. There's a live audio and video stream. If you want to watch live, please do. And if you're doing that, chat with us at irc.twit.tv. It's all the other people watching live at the same time. On-demand versions of the show, as with all our shows, available at the website, twit.tv. There's a YouTube channel dedicated to This Week in Tech. And, of course, you can always subscribe in your favorite podcast platform. Just search for Twit. There's a bunch of shows. Subscribe to them all of them. That way you'll have lots to listen to whenever you're hankering for a good podcast. Thanks for being here. And we'll see you next week. Another Twit.
This is amazing.
Bye-bye.
Doing the Twit.
Doing the Twit.